I did want to spend a little time talking about Australia's role in the New Horizons mission, because it's actually a larger part than you might realize. A little bit more about me. I came right out of college and managed to, I chased my girlfriend and now wife out to the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab. She got me an interview, and I happened to catch on to the New Horizons mission right out of school, thanks to that. So I've been working on it ever since I graduated with my master's degree, and that was in 2002. So I started just with testing, building some lab equipment and test hardware to test the communication system. That led into being the integration and test lead for the communication system and the REC instrument. And then I was there for launch. I was there for as the communications lead for most of crews and through the Pluto flyby. It seems that the longer that I'm on the project, the more titles they give me and the more jobs I get. So I'm now the payload system engineer, which basically means that I'm in charge of the care and feeding of the seven instruments. I think that it's interesting because the way that this might play out is it could be the very first mission that I ever got to work on. And if I have my way, it could be the very last mission I ever get to work on, and I want to be there when we turn out the lights. So at that, I'll just I'll retire at that point, and I'll have worked on it from day one for me and all the way to the last day of the mission. All right, with that, I'm going to talk a little bit more about, as I said, what Australia's contribution was to this. A little bit just for context about the New Horizons mission, just so you can understand when I mentioned the REX instrument. I'm going to talk a lot about it. It's my favorite because it's mine. but it's also not the one that you're going to see the big press clippings on because it doesn't make pretty pictures. So it's the REX instrument is actually it's a radio science instrument. It uses the communication system of the spacecraft. The rest of the instruments on board are the ALICE UV spectrometer. The RALF instrument, which is all the color images that you see, is from half that instrument, and the other half of the instrument provides IR spectroscopy to figure out what Pluto's actually made of, what these features on the surface are. We have the long-range reconnaissance imager, LORI, and all the highest resolution images that you've ever seen are coming from that. The SWAP and PEPSI instruments are charged plasma instruments, so their primary job at encounter was to actually look for the bow shock around Pluto. So as you're flying through it, where's the solar wind getting pulled off by the planet? And then we also have the student dust counter. So it's seven instruments on board. So this is the encounter sped up. There's an awful lot going on all at once, and it's all the instruments are body fixed on the spacecraft. So you actually have to roll the spacecraft all over the place to actually get all the pointing. The RALF instrument is a scanning instrument, so you can see when you're scanning across the targets, you see the kind of sweeping the field of view across the targets. As we fly past Pluto here, the antenna is pointed back at Earth, and this is the occultation. So as light winks out from Earth and then comes back in on the other side of Pluto, you actually can see what happens through the atmosphere. It's a little like watching a sunset through our atmosphere. It's when it's high in the sky, it's providing one kind of source, but when it's down on the horizon, it looks totally different. And you can use that to try to figure out what the atmosphere is made of. The difference between, and actually the ALICE instrument does exactly that on New Horizons, is it uses the UV from the sun through the atmosphere to actually see what the upper atmosphere is made of. And then the REX instrument takes over for the lower atmosphere, which is actually, it's RF, X-band, 8 gigahertz signal coming up from Australia, actually. And it takes over there at the low elevations. Again, I told you I'm going to talk a lot about REX, and I am not going to apologize for it. So, but without the Deep Space Network stations at Canberra, REX would not have been able to do its job. So it was flying on this mission for one job, and that's that occultation. And we designed the mission trajectory so that Australia and California were overlapping in the sky when New Horizons was in the sky. So the entire mission was designed around being able to get the Australian station and the California stations in view of New Horizons. Other things that were done, first-time events in deep space, that also involved the Canberra stations, were beacon mode operations. So for a long cruise period, While we were planning the encounter, we would put the spacecraft in hibernation, and every week it would basically send us a beacon tone saying everything is good, or holding up its hand and say something went wrong, I need help. So it's a green beacon or a red beacon that it sends back. That's what we call it. Obviously, it's not an actual color. Regenerative ranging is another technology that's on New Horizons. It's a first. So normally, when you a ranging signal is something when you ping the spacecraft, basically, in a RF sense. It can turn that signal around, and then you can measure exactly how the phase of the two signals line up, and you can get a distance. The problem is at 30 AU, that's a really long way to go, and you know the power is falling off is 1 over R squared. So you know, 30 AU out and then 30 AU back, that's a really huge amount of power loss. So one way to get around that is you receive the signal on board the spacecraft, and you generate a new copy of it there. You phase up your copy with what's being received, and then you transmit a brand new clean signal down. So that's a new technology that was demonstrated on New Horizons. Another thing that that the Deep Space Network here did for us is called polarization combining. So if you can, we have two transmitters on board, and one transmits in one polarization, another transmits in another. So they can actually both be on at the same time, and what the ground can do is it can line up those phases, perfectly add them together, and you can get twice the power out of our downlink, which increases our data rates, which, you know, It took us 16 months to get the data down, so any bump in our data rates is something that we're always going to look for. So I mentioned a little bit about these stations. So it takes 20 kilowatts power, and then going through a 10 million gain, 10 million times gain, to try to transmit these signals up to the spacecraft. That sounds like a whole lot, right? That's a ton of power. It's a huge antenna, 70 meters across. But we only get 1985 data rates. So we got to Pluto in 2015, but we were operating at 1985 modem speeds. So you can see there the uplink data rate is all of 2,000 bits per second, and the downlink data rate is all of 1,000 bits per second, 999 bits per second. So I'm pretty sure there are probably people in this room that can type faster than that on their computer in terms of information speed. So it's not much you can do at the edge of the solar system. However, the reason that the Australian stations are so important to us is New Horizons is over the southern sky. So you can see here that the reason that elevation angle goes so high is New Horizons actually is flying way up. It's a fixed point in the sky, but as Earth rotates, New Horizons rises and then goes way up in the sky and then sets. As opposed to like Madrid, for instance, where it just kind of skirts the horizon. That does good things for us in terms of being able to get our data down, because we have 11-hour view periods, so we can be in the sky for 11 whole hours. On top of that, again, that sun, thinking about sunset, when the sun is down on the horizon, it's not bright, right? It's not like there's a whole lot of extra light. It's twilight. When it's up at noon, there's a lot more light. And that's all because you're transmitting through so much more atmosphere. And the same thing happens at different frequencies. So at our downlink frequency of 8 gigahertz, when we're high in the sky, we have a whole lot less noise from the atmosphere. And so we can get our data rates much higher. You combine those two things, the polarization combining and the high elevation angle, and on this station and these stations only, we can get 4 times the data rate of elsewhere. So that 999 bits per second comes to a screaming 4,000 bits per second. As I said, that what we're trying to do is we're trying to thread this particular needle where the spacecraft has to fly through the shadows of Pluto and Charon while it's still in view of the Australia and California stations on the ground. So this is, I'm going to talk a little bit about the occultation. An occultation is really you're chasing shadows. You can think of it in terms of, like for exoplanets, you've probably read in the news of all these exoplanet searches. What they're doing is they're looking at stars and watching them just wink out and then come back. Just a little bit of reduction in light and then come back to their full brightness. And we're basically doing the same thing, only at, we're not looking at points of light that are so distant. Instead, we're looking at Earth and with Pluto right there. So it's the signal that's being occulted is the signal from Earth as we're going through the atmosphere, and then you get a hard stop, when you hit the deck, the hard deck of the actual solid body, and then you see the opposite happen on the way out. So we monopolized the deep space network, and we actually took every single one of the stations there in Canberra during the encounter. Station 35 wasn't online yet, it is now, but we had the 70-meter and two 34-meter stations from Canberra, and then we also took four more stations from Goldstone during the encounter. So not a lot of other people got to get their data that day because we were using it, but again, you know, it's because of the signal strength, because it was so high in the sky on Canberra, it's really important. So this is what that little occultation pattern looks like in X-band. This is what you actually see is this Fresnel pattern. It's a known effect of when of a diffraction pattern as you're coming through on any knife edge. When you remove that, you get this blue line. That blue line there, and if it was just if there was no atmosphere whatsoever, that would just be a hard stop, and then it would come back. It would be a square wave. But when it's not, it means that there's information there that you can take out about the atmosphere. In this case, we not only got the radius of the planet, because when the signal finally goes away completely and then comes back, we know where the spacecraft is from ranging all the time, and we can tell, we know exactly how fast it's moving. And so for the first time, we can actually measure the size of Pluto from that signal. In addition, you get these atmospheric profiles of the neutral atmosphere, and you can get pressure measurements based on that. And the interesting thing here, it was very different on the inbound side leg than the outbound leg. So the entry and exit had totally different profiles. And that makes total sense now when you look at Pluto and how different it is from one area to another. You know, you're going to have a different atmospheric profile over a rocky region than over this big ice glacier, nitrogen ice glacier. The other thing that we can do with the REX instrument is we can measure the temperature. So it's also a radiometer. So we know that Pluto's temperature is about 40 degrees above absolute zero. Thank you very much.